Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one, it was on this very day, back in which year, that the first singing telegram was sent? Was that A, 1893, B, 1913, C, 1933, or D, 1953? Hint, the first singing telegram was sent to Rudy Valley on his 32nd birthday. So which year was that? 1893, 1913, 1933, or 1953. Question number two, and it was on this day back in 1986 that the first act since Louis Armstrong performed in Budapest, Hungary. Who was that performer? Was that A, Elvis Presley, B, Frank Sinatra, C, Freddie Mercury, or D, Bruce Springsteen? So who was that? 1986. The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of July 26th. Well, it was on this day, back in 1750, that Johann Sebastian Bach died after an unsuccessful eye operation. Today, back in 1750. And it was 80 years ago today, 1939, that Judy Garland recorded the song Over the Rainbow. 1939.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Yes, and how many times must the cannonballs fly?
Bob Dylan performing Blowin' in the Wind introduces our country and folk music news. It's an article written by Greg Cott, published in Chicago Tribune, July the 5th, 2019, entitled, Why an Avalanche of Protest Music is Once Again in the Air. Is there a formula that explains artistic expression in hard times? Fear and anxiety equal urgent music? Music comes and goes in cycles. Mike Watt, bassist of the groundbreaking post-punk band, the Minutemen, once told the Tribune, and it gets good only when the people making it can feel the wall against their shoulder. Protest music is once again in the air, and why not? Everything feels unstable, pressure points magnified, immigration policies, racial violence, sexual assault, LGBTQ rights, the direction of the country itself. The last couple of years have brought an avalanche of music steeped in the language of hashtag Me Too, hashtag Black Lives Matter, and hashtag Resist, with landmark songs and albums created by everyone from stars such as Kendrick Lamar and Beyonce to indie artists such as Dessa and Superchunk.
He can see the sky. Yes, and how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry?
I would be making music and songs regardless, says Superchunk singer-guitarist Mac McCoffin. But at this moment, what else would I be writing about? It's unavoidable, Superchunk. Has been making music for 30 years, but rarely has the North Carolina Quartet sounded as politically pointed as it does on its blazing 2018 album, What a Time to Be Alive. The album was written in a burst after the 2016 presidential election, with shattering songs such as Cloud of Hate, directed at a handful of aging politicians dictating policy on everything from women's rights to judicial nominations. You broke the world that you're not long for. You broke the world we're living in. It can be psychologically damaging to walk around with all this hate over what certain politicians are doing to America, McCoffin says. Channeling that feeling into art is more healthy. Traditionally, artists have thrown up yellow flags when discussing the notion of writing topical songs, much less singing them right after night on tour when the emotions and events that guided the lyrics may have faded. There's a tricky art to protest music because it can come off as shrill, preachy, or simple-minded. Artists frequently perform to audiences that already share their belief, so what's the point in preaching to the choir? I don't want to be the guy on the soapbox, Patterson Hood of the Drive-By Truckers told the Tribune in the wake of the band's most political album yet, the 2016 release, American Band. The more concerned about is this really entertaining? It was a turnoff of political folk music. Even Bob Dylan got bored by that aspect of it. Hood did, inspired by artists as diverse as The Clash and Tom T. Hall. The Clash's Rock the Casbah was a hit when Hood was in high school with lyrics about Iran's ban on Western music in the wake of the 1979 Islamic Revolution. Hall's Watergate Blues surfaced in 1973 as the Nixon White House was being consumed by political scandal. I heard Rock the Casbah on the radio even though it was extremely political, and it's still timely, Hood says. McCoffin overcame his resistance to writing political songs when he realized through the music and words of artists he admired, there is value to making people feel less alone. People who write great political songs make community a big part of what they do, he says. Music is where communities and scenes can form, which can be so valuable when it seems that forces at the top are massing against you. In performing the What a Time to Be Alive songs on the road, McCoffin has mixed feelings. One of the concerns with making a record of the moment is that a year or two or 5 years later, it all seems dated, he says. But unfortunately, it's all very applicable. Things seem to be getting worse, not better. There's a cathartic aspect to playing these songs live, with people singing along instead of just waiting for the old favorites. Protest music, once again, in the air. Turning to classical music news, we have this article by Fiona Maddox, published in TheGuardian.com on June the 15th, 2019, entitled Nicola Benedetti, Even Age Six, I Was Moved to Tears by Music. Scottish-born of Italian heritage, the violinist Nicola Benedetti is in demand across the globe. The youngest recipient of the Queen's Medal for Music, she is a passionate ambassador for music education with her own foundation and YouTube channel. She will appear as soloist with the National Youth Orchestra of Great Britain, NYO, at the BBC Proms on 27 July. Her latest album, featuring recordings of works written for her by the jazz musician Wynton Marsalis, is released by Decca on the 12th of July. Wynton Marsalis has written all the music on your new disc. For you, what does it sound like? Wynton's music sounds a lot like him and the life he's led. The compositions take us from the introspection of a spiritual to the raucous celebration of a hootenanny, from a lullaby to a nightmare, and from a campfire to a circus. His consistent interest in playing and studying the music of Bach, Miles Davis, Beethoven, Ellington, Shostakovich, Coltrane, Bartok, Louis Armstrong, and on, makes for an absorption and understanding of wildly contrasting styles that is unique. So why was working with Marsalis so important? The music affirms a belief I've held since childhood that when we strip away our concepts of race, religion, our culture, our DNA, shows more similarity than difference. Both myself and Wynton always agree on one thing. We're interested in seeking out those commonalities, and his music expresses a desire for coming together and understanding one another. I hope the recording speaks to those with a curiosity in crossing cultures and in complex, colorful, and uplifting music. Earlier this year, you launched the Benedetti Foundation. What's its aim? To advocate the role of music in schools and communities through workshops and to provide support, information, and inspiration to teachers. So much phenomenal teaching and music making is going on. The best gift I can give to anyone is to expose the best of what's going on to those who don't know where to find it. Now, you hold positions with many youth music organizations. Are you aiming at the next generation of music professionals or at music's wider social purpose? Both. Music, if taught well, with love, passion, and purpose, can provide life-changing experiences for many young people. My focus is not on trying to turn everyone into a musician, but in a general enrichment of society. You started the violin at age 4. By 8, you were leading the National Children's Orchestra of Great Britain. What was the secret to harnessing your own talent as a child? I was actually most engaged with the emotion and depth of the music. Even age 6, I was moved to tears by music, just listening to Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto or Elgar's Salute d'Amour. I was driven by that desire to play, but I was also lucky to have a mother who understood you can't give up at every hurdle. She taught us that there's even deeper fun in true achievement. Finally, millennials are reportedly tuning in to classical music. Can we ditch the idea of classical having an image problem? I'm not a fan of focusing on classical music's supposed image problem. The race, culture, and gender of the majority of composers we still play in concert halls is a fact. We can apologize for it, mask it, express dissatisfaction. It won't change the past. Does it make Beethoven's music less good or less powerful or less relevant? But music in all its forms can be studied, worked on, developed, and created by anyone of any gender, race, and culture. That is also a fact. If you have the exposure to it, it can become something to you. And in blues music news, we have this article entitled The Work of Their Hands. This is written by Brian Woods, published in IndieWeek.com on the 10th of July, 2019. The Blue Muse Project and Music Maker 25 embody the living blues. Embodiment is the bedrock of the blues. They are the chronicles, poetic, brutally frank, or both, of a broad range of experiences endured by forebears whose names were often lost over more than two U.S. centuries. Countless blues songs document the consequences of troubled love and lust or the sweat and strain of onerous physical labor. In many of these experiences, the body, working, resisting, overcoming, ecstatic, is central.
Wednesday's worse, Thursday's also sad.
Photographer Timothy Duffy highlights the principle in Blue Muse, a collection of 60 large tintype photographs of blues musicians published recently by the University of North Carolina Press. The book is one of three initiatives in a year-long celebration of the 25th anniversary of Hillsborough's Music Maker Relief Foundation, which Duffy co-founded not only to document hundreds of aging masters, blues, gospel, Native Americans, and string band musicians in the South, but also to help alleviate their financial strains and provide opportunities to record and perform. Large format tintype photographs made with a camera weighing more than 600 pounds provides incredible intimacy and detail. When the faces and hands of elderly musicians fill the 14-by-14-inch frames, the contours of their skin and wrinkles and scars disclose topographical maps of rich lives. The article skips down. The companion CD, also called Blue Muse, features a number of the artists depicted in the company of guest musicians, including Taj Mahal, Jimbo Mathus, and Cool John Ferguson. The compilation features a previously unreleased Eric Clapton track, a 1995 duet with Duffy on Mississippi Blues. Article skips down, ends with this. While all this documentation is vital, the blues is a living tradition. Duke Performances helps Music Maker Relief Foundation close out its 25th year with Music Maker 25, a week-long festival in December, featuring concerts and other events, including an exhibit of Duffy's tintype photographs. And in music research and technology, we have this article written by Jonah Weiner, published in Rolling Stone magazine, January 2019 issue, entitled Hi-Fi Bars. It's a weekday night in downtown L.A., and no one at this bar is paying attention to the movie star. Not because actors at L.A. bars are familiar sights, which of course they are, but because at this bar the focus is on high-quality vinyl and high-fidelity sound. It's called In Sheep's Clothing, and the movie star, Chris Pine, is one of 50-odd people who have come here to bask in the sound of the two massive $12,000 Klipshorn speakers as they pump out vintage jazz, rock, soul, and ambient LPs from two Girard 301 turntables. Various policies dictate behavior. No phone calls, no loud voices, no Instagramming, and in fact, no photos at all. In Sheep's Clothing is part of a new California trend, alongside LA's Gold Line and Bard Cheru up in Oakland. These places take inspiration from Japanese record bars, known broadly as Music Kishistanten, where DJ-owned pour whiskey and shoshu while spinning LPs. The people behind the California Kishistanten were sick of noisy bars where, as a Shuru co-owner has put it, music is either sonic wallpaper, an afterthought, or inaudible. The point isn't to see and be seen. It's to hear and delightfully shut the hell up. This is written by Jonah Weiner, once again in Rolling Stone, July 2019 issue. Thank you. Carlos Santana's Black Magic Woman introduces our rock and pop music news. It's entitled Carlos Santana's Supernatural Summer. It's written in the July 2019 issue of Rolling Stone magazine by Corey Grove. Before Carlos Santana hits the stage, he consults with a higher power. It's kind of the same thing I did when I was at Woodstock, he says, describing a photo taken at a Napa Valley, California festival this past May. I was praying, keep me in tune and in time, I can do the rest. This summer, of course, marks the 50th anniversary of Woodstock, where Santana exploded onto the national stage with a magical set. The guitarist played, and he will headline a golden anniversary event on the original grounds in Bethel, New York. Santana has other things to celebrate, too. It's the 20th anniversary of the mega-selling album Supernatural, and he just released a new LP, Africa Speaks, featuring African songs. We're going to bring a lot of fury and fire. We're going to honor yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Despite the marathon sets, he says, music never drains me or exhausts me. Santana credits a healthier lifestyle he started embracing around 1972. Now I'm 71, and because I didn't abuse my body, I have the stamina and the vibration to present myself at any age I want. Got your spell on me, baby. Got your spell. And finally, we have this article about Buddy the Beagle. It's entitled, Buddy the Beagle Slings His Way to Fame. This article is published in People magazine on the 8th of July, 2019. Meet Buddy Mercury, the hit-making hound. After being adopted in 2016 by music lover Lori Wolfe and her husband Glenn, a professional drummer, Buddy developed some musical talent of his own. He started hitting the keys and singing along, says Lori, 37. Our jaws dropped. Now the Beagle Bassett Mix has over 1 million YouTube views and his own line of merchandise, with a percentage of his earnings going to animal rescue charities. BuddyMercury.com. As for his musical tastes, he loves the group Queen, whose legendary frontman inspired Buddy's stage name. The picture of Buddy howling with his back arched reminded my husband of Freddie Mercury, says Lori. It was perfect. And this is Queen of Chorus singing Another One Bites the Dust. So how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day back in which year that the first singing telegram was sent. Was that A, 1893, B, 1913, C, 1933, or D, 1953? Hint, this first singing telegram was sent to Rudy Valley on his 32nd birthday. So which year was that? Correct answer? Answer C, 1933. As noted in a 2017 article in soundbeat.org, on July 28, 1933, a fan sent Valley a telegram wishing him a happy birthday. Telegrams had long been harbingers of bad news, and this lighthearted message gave George P. Oslin a bright idea. Oslin, a public relations director at Western Union, asked operator Lucille Lips to sing the message to the bandleader, and the singing telegram was born. Western Union started offering the service to the public that same year and carried on until 1974. Before Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, and all the rest, Rudy Valley was the very first crooner. Before electric microphones, singers needed powerful voices to reach theater cheap seats. Valley's solution? He sang through a megaphone, which allowed him to project those velvety tones. And the answer to our second question, it was on this day back in 1986 that the first act since Louis Armstrong performed in Budapest, Hungary. Who was that performer? Was it Elvis Presley, Frank Sinatra, Freddie Mercury, or Bruce Springsteen? Correct answer. Answer C, Freddie Mercury and his band Queen. As noted by Sarah Boslow in PopMatters.com on 15 November 2012, it not only a great concert that captures the spirit of Queen at the height of their powers, but also documents an important moment in the history of Eastern Europe during the Cold War. The Budapest concert made Queen the first Western band to perform a stadium show behind the Iron Curtain. One reason Queen could play stadiums and fill them up was because they had the ability to make everyone in the audience feel like they were part of a great occasion. That ability was on full display in Budapest, where an estimated 80,000 fans packed Budapest Népstadion, People's Stadium. This was during the Cold War, remember, to hear Queen perform, making it the largest concert ever performed in that stadium. It had been over 30 years since Western music had opened the supremacy during the Cold War and its claim over the Soviet Union. The CIA founded the Congress of Cultural Freedom, which sponsored literary journals, ballet, and modernist musical performances, and modern art muses exhibits, and jazz musicians. Foremost among the Goodwill Jazz Ambassadors was Louis Armstrong. Besides East Berlin, Armstrong and his band also brought their jazz diplomacy to Budapest in 1965, contributing to the long-standing love of American jazz in the Hungarian city, which now hosts a Louis Armstrong festival. So let's close out today's program with What a Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. And as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program, intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review, readily available as a podcast after the broadcast in the TRRS website, TriangleReadingService.org. Now, if you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson, 919-832-5138.